Hi everyone, I'm Joel Premack and welcome to the Community-Led Growth Show. Each week, I will be speaking with community leaders to share insights with you all on how to build a community-led growth company. Let's get to it.
Hey everyone, I'm Joel Premack, host of the Community-Led Growth Show. Today, I'm joined by Evan Hamilton, Director of Community at HubSpot. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Evan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. Let's start off with a super basic question. Would you please give all of our listeners a quick 3-second intro about yourself?
Yeah, I've been in the community industry for over 15 years at companies like UserVoice, Coursera, CMX, Reddit, now at HubSpot, leading up our community-led growth efforts. In my spare time, I like to hang out with my kids and play some guitar.
Nice. And you also have a newsletter that I get every Monday.
Yes, Community Manager Breakfast every Monday. Best 3 links I've found about community from the week before.
Love it. Well, you just mentioned some really impressive organizations. I just also want to call out, in case people haven't checked out your LinkedIn beforehand, you've actually been, currently are, now a 4-time director level community role in 4 different organizations, as well as a head of community at another. So very like senior in the general community space, because there aren't that many like VPs, let alone C-suites of community. So I am just really curious, like, how have you continuously found like the right per se, like organizations that truly get and value all that community can bring to the table for a company?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's a really hard thing to do, but super important. And I take it very seriously. When I am looking for a new role, I go deep. You know, you are interviewing the company as much as they are interviewing you. And I've said no to some, pretty significant companies because it didn't feel like the fit was right. I will say I'm glad I didn't take that Twitter job. I think the first thing is just, do they have a real problem? I've talked to many companies who say, hey, so we heard we need community. We got to build community. And I say, great. Why do you need community? And they say, because someone told us we need it. If they don't have a problem that they're trying to solve with community, that is not a great situation, because they may be excited about it now, but as soon as there's a downturn, like right now, that's going to be the first thing they're going to cut. As soon as they start thinking about, where they want to allocate money next year, they're going to look at your team and say, well, what do they really do? So I really start with just, do they have a problem that they have identified that community can help solve? Then the next step really is trying to get stories out of them, because most talented folks are going to be able to tell you the thing you want to hear. If you're like, so does your company value community? They're going to say, absolutely, here's why we do. And so instead, ask for stories. Tell me about a time when you put your community first. Tell me about a time when you were in a tough situation in terms of, making a moral decision. Those sort of things. So you can really just tease out, how do they actually act? What are real situations? When was the last time you talked to a customer? What was it about? From there, I try and ask around. I think when I was younger, I thought, well, it's the interview. That's my chance to learn things. But you can ask current members of the team. You can ask to speak to current members. So, hey, before I make a decision, I'd like to talk to your director of product, or I'd like to talk to some of the community managers you've already hired. You can ask former employees, trawl around on LinkedIn, be like, hey, would you just give me 5 minutes on the phone to tell me what you thought? And ask customers too. If you care about how the company's treating customers, find some customers and say, hey, what is it like working with this company? I think you can also go through their flows. That's helpful too. And just, sign up for their site, see what sort of messaging you get, use a burner email, email their support team, and just generally see how they treat their customers. It is an investigation. It is not, again, just you ask them a couple questions and that's all you get. You can do a lot of looking around. So you should be checking on Glassdoor. You should be talking to people and digging up every piece of info you can to make that decision, because it's a big decision in the end.
Definitely. One other place on that list I will add is I check G2. I want to see how they're actually doing in terms of like reviews, let alone like responding to reviews, as well as seeing hopefully like continue momentum. Because I think that speaks to like the customer side of like, do customers like you? What are they saying about you? Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. And if you do that in advance, sometimes you can ask about that too. I've asked companies where I've been like, hey, saw a review from a year ago where they said this horrible thing happened. And sometimes you get that, oh yeah, well, that was an outlier, or we're much better. But sometimes you get a real story there where they're like, yeah, we had terrible support. We let go of our head of support. We have a new one that we brought in 3 months after that. And so again, you just like, you're teasing out the narrative of like, where are you as a company?
Exactly. I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. Kind of digging deeper in like a very specific area of interviewing for a new community leader role. Now, since joining Lattice, I've learned so much more about HR and everything kind of encompassing people and employee experience, one of which is like salary and total rewards benchmarking. Community means one, so many different things at so many different organizations. Two, as I mentioned earlier, there aren't too many people at, let alone like the director, like, and then as you continue going up in organizations. So how have you, for everyone, like gone about actually benchmarking where you'd like your comp and salary and overall total rewards package to be compared to your peers?
It's hard. For all the reasons you mentioned, you know, community can encompass a lot of things. It's still a pretty new industry. There's just not a lot of people in leadership roles, so there's not a ton of useful data out there. You know, there are some community salary reports. I definitely recommend looking at them, but a lot of the ranges are like 50,000 to 110,000, which is a pretty big range. And so it can be tricky. You know, I think things that will affect it, you know, your seniority, even if you're very talented, if you're 2 years into it, you're not going to, you know, get offered as much. The stage the organization is in, just keep in mind, you know, based on how much funding they have, how much runway, the, you know, economic situation, they'll be able to pay more or less. You know, startups don't pay as much as big giant companies, but they can pay all right. The community stage is another. I mean, if you're launching their community for the first time, they haven't seen the value yet. And so, yeah, they're probably going to pay less. If they have a massively successful community or one that was once great that they need you to revamp, like they've seen some of the value, and so they should be willing to pay a bit more. It also, you know, how many people you're managing affects that, which probably isn't fair. I don't kind of love the more you manage, the more you get paid, but it's just a fact of the industry. And then, you know, whether you can show dollar value. If they're asking you to come in, they're like, hey, just create a community because we want good vibes. I mean, again, going back to solving a problem, you're probably not going to get paid as much for that. If they're like, hey, we need this community, this is going to help us, you know, 10x our growth. Okay, then they should be paying the amount that you would expect for 10x. Again, investigation, you know, would look at Glassdoor. You can look at other roles, you know, at that level. So director, et cetera. It's not going to be exactly the same, obviously, but it can give you some sense, and also give you some sense going back to whether they are valuing community as to whether they are valuing community the same as other roles. If their marketing salary is, you know, 150K and they're offering you 100K, it's maybe not a great sign that they're taking you seriously. There's also like a fine line, I think, between underselling yourself and overselling yourself. And one thing to call out here is that studies show that, you know, generally women and minorities are less likely to advocate for themselves because of, unfortunately, how society has conditioned them. And so, you know, this is going to depend a little bit on what mindset you're coming in with. You want to make sure you're asking for the right amount. You definitely don't want to undersell yourself and put yourself in a bad position. You also don't want to go so crazy that you're going to have, you know, eyes on you saying like, okay, we doubled that salary. When are you going to deliver? And so you have to figure out that balance for yourself. And also just what you need in your life. I mean, ultimately it kind of comes down to that. And I think that's where, to your point about packages versus just pure pay, it really depends on how much risk you're willing to take on, what things are important to you. You know, before the podcast, we were talking about working remotely. If that's super important, that can be something that you factor in. Stock is such a tricky thing. It is playing the lottery. I'm 0-for-4 on stock. Someday I'll make some money off of stock. But you know, if you say, hey, I really believe in this company and I can make do with less salary, then stock is a great way to bump up that offer. If you're like, no, I got to pay the bills. I've got kids. I got things to pay for. I don't know how this company is going to do. You might want to go heavier on the cash side. And you know, there's other things you can work out in there, right? There's bonus structures, there's a signing bonus. You know, I've definitely had that before where the company's like, we can't hit the number you want, but we could do a signing bonus for the first year. And then hopefully you get promoted for the next year. And that's kind of a nice way to not push them to such a high number that they're going to be watching like a hawk, but be able to get that extra bump. So, it really is a journey. Again, I think it starts with a lot of investigation and thinking about what is most important to you and then just navigating it with the company. But I do want to really call out, especially for folks who might undersell themselves, nobody reasonable has ever retracted a job offer because of what the candidate asked for. They will just say, we can't do that. Here's what we can do. And so, don't sell yourself short. Don't say, well, that's what they offered. I don't want to scare them off. I don't want to upset them. If you upset them by asking for what you're worth, then you don't want to work there.
I would 1000% agree. I would equally add on to that and say that I think it's really interesting how people, they have, you mentioned like ranges, for example, of like, you may think you're worth up here. Companies may be trying to like range you here. You don't want your number to be like an outlier in a typical data set. Like you want it to be a reasonable range so that you can come to something that is reasonable to both parties, I think.
Yeah.
Less of like, you're here, they're here. How are you going to make, as you said, even like a 50K jump? Like that is someone's potentially like whole salary. Yeah. That's a whole nother person.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to jump.
And one thing to keep in mind is companies are unsure how to set these salaries because there's not a lot of data. Probably most of them are looking at, Comscore or CMX reports on salaries. And again, those reports are funky because there's just not a big enough data set. And so, there are people with the title community manager who are basically doing director level work and might be paid a lot more. There are people in director level roles who are getting screwed over, paid not enough. And so that's another thing to keep in mind is just helping them understand where your number comes from and saying, hey, this is what the average salaries are. If you're asking for more, explain, hey, this is why I'm worth more. I've done this, I've done that. You're not going to find very many people who have done those things. That can often be true. Or if they're really lowballing you, saying, hey, look at this report. Like the median salary is higher than what you're offering me. So you should adjust the offer.
Yeah. One other thing, you mentioned this earlier, but I am a big fan of like talking to your peers, yes, about the company. But I think in turn, especially in community, that equally is almost like more valuable if they're comfortable even sharing like range or ballparks of like, hey, where they are. Because you can kind of like benchmark someone else because you understand like community better than most like people who aren't in it is what I'm trying to get at. So you can benchmark for yourself and say like, hey, talk to 5 other people who are at director level roles at companies of similar stages and sizes to our like this one. Here's where they're at. Here's where your offer is. See the
100%.
See the little drop off right there.
Yeah.
Let's make that work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, anyone who wants to, send me a message on LinkedIn, I'm happy to ballpark that for you because I've hired lots of community people and been in a bunch of roles. And so, yeah, absolutely. I can kind of squint at it and give you a sense of whether you're getting a reasonable offer.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned this a minute or so ago about how you really like to see companies trying to solve for a specific problem or business outcome that they would like community to directly impact. So now that you worked in a handful of different community roles at a handful and variety of like different types of companies, all within tech, but you mentioned some B2C, some B2B, EdTech, Reddit, Coursera, et cetera. So I'm just really curious, like, what are some of those like typical outcomes that you hear and see businesses trying to impact by either launching or already having an existing community?
Yeah. So I would go back to the spaces model from CMX, which I helped a little bit on back in the day. And so what that acronym stands for is support, product, acquisition, content, and engagement. And so on the support side, this is kind of the common legacy use of communities is still very much in play, but based on what I've seen, starting to decrease a little bit. And in terms of share, this is about getting peers to help each other and to decrease support costs. And so the measurement here is really around, you know, how much does it cost to have a support agent handle a ticket? And then how much does it cost to have it answered in a forum? There's, I don't know, do we want to dive deep on ROI measurement or should we?
Oh, I'm all here for it. I am so here for it. I love it. Go is like deep as you want in it. I think everybody needs to hear this. Yes.
So that's the like safe measure of deflection, which is just somebody posted in the forum and they got an answer, the cost to get them an answer compared to the cost if they wrote it. Usually less because usually it's a peer answering them. And so you're just factoring in the forum software cost and the community management cost. You can start to think about, well, okay, there's probably people viewing this answer who got a solution from it without writing anything, especially if you have, you know, a post in the forum that gets 4,000 visits a month, that's saving you some money. It's a really tricky one. Richard Millington has talked a lot about this because you just don't know how many of those people are getting a solution. You can try and do some surveying on the site, which can help a little bit, but I would advise not saying, hey, 100% of people who visited this page were deflected. You want to choose some sort of reasonable number in there. Rich has seen numbers around, I think, like 2%. So don't expect it to actually be a lot of visitors. And you just want to be careful with that number because as soon as somebody skeptical comes in, they're going to poke holes in it. So you don't want to overextend yourself there. It's also worth looking at retention numbers. Support forums, you know, can be very cut and dry, but they can also actually add a lot of value. And so look at people who spend time in the support forums. Is their retention value higher? That's actually one that I don't see measured very often, but is a huge benefit. The second part of space is product. And so this is about product ideation and feedback. This one is challenging. It is often, I think, a secondary benefit, an ancillary benefit that people add on because it's very hard to get a dollar number here. You know, you can potentially look at feature adoption, how many people who asked for a feature and then we announced it started using it, but it's still going to be a relatively small number. You could look at satisfaction, but really this is just about providing anecdotal value for your product team. And so I don't recommend leading with this as the value you're providing, but it's definitely something you can add on. Third is acquisition. And so this is actually helping bring in customers. And I think this is kind of the cutting edge of community because very few people have done it and even fewer have written about it or done talks about it. As I've asked around, people have said, yeah, we feel weird about it. So we don't share, which I don't think you should feel weird. I mean, as long as you're helping those people, great. If they become customers, I think that's a win-win for everyone. And so this is about, you know, bringing new people into your orbit, actually getting them to become customers. And so you can look at things like customers who first came in via the community, that was their first touch to your organization versus coming in via a marketing campaign or something like that. You can look at customers that went directly from the community to purchasing. You can also survey about consideration, which is basically a brand marketing term for how likely is this person to consider using your brand, and look at how does community actually drive that, you know, the people who you invited to your event, what is their consideration before and after? But still a lot of work to be done in that area. Content is basically, if you have some sort of content engine and it's valuable to have content, you can get your community to create it. And again, measuring dollar value here can be challenging. It depends really if your company has a dollar value for content, and different companies treat content different ways. So if you have a team that's already measuring that, great. Otherwise, you might just be looking at the amount of views you're bringing in. And then lastly, and this is kind of my favorite, is engagement. And this is really about getting people to stay engaged with your brand and with your product. And so measurements here can be feature adoption. You know, are customers actually using your features? Retention, are they sticking around? Spend, are they actually upgrading and spending more with your company? And this is where I think community is really powerful. I think there's a huge opportunity in acquisition, but we haven't figured it out yet. Support works well. Engagement is just the sweet spot for me because having people connect and learn from each other is just a fantastic way to get them to stick around versus trying to do that with ebooks and webinars and those sort of things. Those can work, but they're very dry versus learning with your peers. So yeah, check it out, CMX Spaces model.
Awesome. Thank you so much for breaking that down, both like what each concept is, plus like some of the more typical ways I would say are to show ROI for each one. Because I think that that's really helpful and makes people think like these are true, consistent business outcomes that each of these support. Here are ways to actually measure it so that it then can inform and create hopefully like smarter and better job descriptions to have better interviews, like all those sorts of things, because they're starting to understand the sorts of value that it can add to the company. So thank you so much for sharing all of that.
Yeah, I mean, this has been my hobby horse for years. I think we have a lot of artistic types in the community industry, myself included. I was a theatrical lighting design major, but you know, just because there is art to our work doesn't mean there isn't a business value. And measuring it is hard, like it's not easy, but it's worthwhile. And even if you only get partially there and you say, hey, like we influenced these leads, they came to the community and then later they purchased, we don't know if the community directly did it, that's still something. And that still gets you closer and closer to being valued the way other organizations are. And the most successful folks I've seen in community are able to dig these numbers out.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So, been around the block a few times in the community world. I know we're coming up close to time. So I'm really curious what your three community trends are for B2B SaaS in 2023 and beyond are.
Yeah, it's a very interesting time. I think the first one is just the decreased efficacy of SEO and ads. You know, Apple has made changes that have made ads much less effective and tracking much less effective. SEO not working quite as well as before. There's a lot of crummy results in search. There's a lot of competition. And so these tools that were like essential for the B2B SaaS playbook are not working the way they used to. It's frankly, you know, pretty scary for businesses. And so I don't want to, you know, be blindly optimistic about community and say community is the one savior for all these things. But I think there is absolutely a role for community there, because people are, you know, not trusting Google search results as much. They're going to TikTok to search for things. They're going to Instagram. They want to hear from people, and community is people. So I think there's a big opportunity for community to pick up some of the slack here. The second one would be related, which is just the evolution of advocacy. You know, traditionally, B2B has done a lot of case studies and a lot of logos. And I just don't think that those have the impact they used to. You know, it used to be, oh, if you have like Google's logo on your site, it's really exciting. Google has many, many thousands of employees. And so being able to say we have one Google employee using our product is not very impressive anymore. It's like, it's table stakes. You got to have the logos. But I don't think those move the needle as much as they used to. And so, you know, what we are seeing is the advocacy that is working best is people hearing from other people, looking on review sites, looking on social, going to their private communities, which is really a challenge for traditional marketers because you're not in those communities usually. And so figuring out how you can activate your community to go out and advocate on your behalf is, that to me is like the winning strategy. It's challenging and complex and it's messy because it's not one channel with perfect measurement. But it is the thing that's going to make the difference, I think. Lastly, you know, just thinking a lot about format. So this is both tools and the value provided. On the tooling front, I think people know I've been very skeptical of Slack for communities. I was kind of vindicated that there was some research from Common Room recently saying that chat communities see a big increase in traffic right at the beginning and then it falls off. It's not because I hate chat. It's just because I question chat and especially a platform like Slack that isn't designed for communities as the center of community. But what's been fascinating is seeing more forum softwares adding chat and actually some chat softwares adding forums. And so I'm curious to see if we end up with this interesting hybrid model where like chat is the lobby and the forums are kind of the breakout rooms. I think there's some value in that because I understand the immediacy and the energy around chat is really interesting, but is not necessarily a great long-term store of value. So I'm curious to see how that one develops. I think there are other, you know, formats that are interesting to explore as well. I'm not particularly, I don't know, optimistic about the metaverse, but I do think VR itself could be interesting. There is a great piece, forgetting where, I'll have to find the link and we'll put it in the show notes, but about how most people may actually encounter VR through their work first rather than through a personal purchase, which is much more how sort of desktop computers were introduced versus cell phones. And so I think in B2B, there's some opportunity to play around with VR and maybe be first there. I don't think it's going all in on the metaverse and opening up your virtual city, but I think it's, hey, if we're doing virtual events, maybe this is a way to make it more live and more fun. And frankly, I don't think that needs to be immersive 3D either. And there's great tools like GatherTown, which is sort of looks like 1990s Pokemon game, you know, or Zelda, where you're like a little, you know, 64-bit character. But it gives that feeling of I'm moving around. It's dynamic. I'm not just sitting in a, you know, wall of squares. The other thing, last thing about format that I think is really important is we need to be providing more value with our communities. When I was building the User Voice community 10 years ago, you know, just bringing together customer service professionals was enough. And I've seen lots of communities like this where it was like, for the first time ever, we're bringing together IT professionals. And people are just blown away that they are in a room with their peers. It's all been done. Everyone's been connected. For almost any group, at least large group, you can find a community. And so that means to stand out in the crowd, we either have to go more niche, which is definitely possible. You know, you see people building communities for IT professionals working in food services. You know, it's a very specific niche. And so there's going to have specific conversations there. But I think we also need to innovate in terms of format and how we're delivering value. Because just throwing people in a forum and saying, discuss, like, it's great if people get value out of that, but people have a lot to do in their day versus thinking about, well, what is a format that's really useful for this group? Is it one-on-one networking? Is it, you know, maybe I was researching two personas that have trouble working together and we were talking about, well, let's maybe have them do like a mock debate and bring together these two groups and like have them practice talking to each other. I think there's so much we can do to be creative here. And so, you know, B2B community professionals really need to start thinking deeply about how am I going to stand out in the crowd because there's more and more competition.
So two things. One, yesterday, I believe, or today, I forgot which day, I actually wrote a LinkedIn post about how brands need to create fans because they're not always going to be in the spaces where people are talking about their problems that they actually solve. So need to have fans who can like speak up when they're not present, which 100%. Is in like these almost like priceless, almost like walled off areas, more or less two brands. Two, so on your mention of a debate between like two personas that typically struggle or to work together, I think it was maybe like last year, a brand and Second City partnered together. And they actually did a sales and marketing roast. And they actually had like a CRO and a CMO like
nice.
Do a whole thing. There was like an education, I believe, like component too.
Yeah.
But they also had like an element of a roast too. So
I love that. Yeah.
That could be fun.
Get creative.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, who doesn't love a good Second City show? I'm here. I love it.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, love all the trends. Thank you so much, Evan, for joining us today on the Community-Led Growth Show. If people want to follow and or connect with you afterwards, what are the best channels and or handles for them to use to do so?
Yeah, evanhamilton.com. You can find a link there to sign up for my newsletter, Community Manager Breakfast. That's the best way to hear from me every Monday in your inbox. I won't spam you. I'll just send you three great links. You can also follow me on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, but not spending as much time there right now due to circumstances. So, yeah.
Get that. Same here. I do get the newsletter. Will vouch. Very helpful links. Yeah. So, of course, got to compliment good when it's right in front of me. So, your newsletter is definitely great. On that note, have a great day. Thank you so much, Evan.
Thanks for having me.